Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
We are extending our safer at home order until May 26th.
The governor says it's not safe to reopen Wisconsin until there is more COVID-19 testing capacity. The extension came one day after lawmakers, in historic votes over the internet, sent Evers a COVID-19 response package. April 7, vote totals were finally released, and new Supreme Court Justice, Dane County Judge Jill Karofsky, will replace Justice Dan Kelly this fall. Democratic State Representative David Crowley won a new job, and Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett kept his job. All this on Rewind, your week in review for April 17th.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
The biggest news this week was Governor Tony Evers extending the Safer at Home order. That was scheduled to expire 1 week from today on April 24th. He pushed it ahead, extended it to May 26th. Now, before JR and I talk about that, let's listen to how the governor and Missy Hughes, the CEO of the Wisconsin Economic Development Corp, talked about why that is needed. And Missy Hughes talked about the 134,000 small businesses who are struggling to cope. So please.
I believe at least the business groups I've talked to and the businessmen and women I've talked to, they care about safety as much as I do. And they understand that in order for us to get to a point where reopening can happen on a gradual, thoughtful way, that we need to have more testing. We need to have more PPE. We need to have more contact tracing. We need to be able to provide that safety for the people of Wisconsin. This gives us all a chance to flatten the curve, make sure that we have these preconditions set in place that these several governors agreed on, and that will give time also for businesses to prepare what it's going to be like when they do reopen.
We've seen a 40% drop in restaurant sales and practically 100% decrease in travel-related sales. So to give you a sense of what small business means in Wisconsin, I want to share this with you. We have 50,000 small retailers, 44,000 small healthcare and social service providers, 23,000 arts and entertainment and recreation businesses, and over 17,000 small food and lodging businesses. All of these businesses have been impacted by the coronavirus.
Okay, JR, I want to walk through some of the elements of this order. Jump in whenever you feel, let's start. Okay, the governor said four things. We need more testing, we need community tracing, we need more isolation, and we need more PPE before he could rescind the Safer at Home. This means K-12s, public and private schools, will close for the rest of the year. And then he kind of fine-tuned it, JR. Your thoughts on that? Essential retailers must limit customers, require 6-foot spacing. Largest retailers must offer alternative hours for the most vulnerable. And then I want to ask you about one more thing. Libraries, some non-essential businesses may conduct curbside businesses, but they still must remain closed. And then finally, golf courses. Yeah, you can play, but you have to reserve your tee times online or over the phone. No clubhouses, no pro shops open. Your thoughts on the order, JR, and the tweaks?
Well, a real big thing to talk about is how this is different from the first order, and that is that this was issued by Andrea Palm, the DHS secretary, who has not been confirmed by the state Senate. Now, let me tell you why it's important. The governor, under state law, has the power to declare a health emergency. It's a 60-day window. That power expires in kind of early to mid-May.
May 12th.
The statute this is offered under gives powers to the health services secretary separate from the governor's. Now, what I want to know is what's the extent of those powers? The governor's chief legal counsel, Ryan Nielsen, during a conference call on Thursday, said they have no worries about the constitutionality of this order using Andrea Palm's authority. However, I've already seen kind of a roadmap, if you will, from the conservative Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty about how to challenge this order on, yes, Palm's authority. Don't forget that Palm has not been confirmed by the state Senate. I've already seen at least two Republican senators calling for her to be rejected. They have the Senate convene immediately, reject her nomination. Now, as a side note, don't forget that in the middle of a farm crisis, the state Senate rejected the nomination of the DATCAP secretary. I'm not getting feedback that it'd be a good idea to reject the nomination of the health services secretary in the middle of this national pandemic. That said, there are Republicans who are really aggravated by this latest move because they want to see some certainty in the date of when this is going to end. This is really where you're going to see the kind of slight alliance, whatever you want to call it, between Evers and lawmakers, the kind of truce. This is going to fray that because now he's pushing for an additional month, and people in rural areas, largely represented by Republicans, are going, why am I having the same kind of order as Milwaukee is when we don't have the same number of cases? The governor's answer yesterday in the conference call was, we have to have a comprehensive approach. We can't allow a hotspot to pop up in a rural area, overwhelm a rural hospital, and cause a real problem.
Which is why it's very important to look at the responses, first of all, from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, to extend this order for another month without a plan for how to reopen the state or clear benchmarks for an early explanation is simply unacceptable. He said that the Senate GOP senators will look for legal or legislative relief to truly work with the governor to make these very serious decisions that will have long-term effects on our businesses, our children, and our way of life. And then, JR, you and I then saw, let me hold it in my hand, a press release from the two assembly leaders, Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Steinicke, using the same, we will look for legal and legislative relief, but then two sentences from Speaker Voss' statement and Mr. Steinicke's statement. Safer at home orders' main intent was to flatten the curve, which we have successfully done to this point, not devastate our families. And point two, the governor can't control the coronavirus, but he can control the impact on the state's economy. We must begin the recovery process before the economic damage can't be done. What does it mean when the three top Republican legislative leaders say we're going to look for number one legislative, number two potential legal redress to the governor's extension of Safer at Home, JR?
Oh, we're going to court. I mean, the reality is the legal option is more realistic than the legislative one. Why I say that is any bill they pass right in the governor's powers or the health services secretary powers, that must be signed by Governor Evers or they must override a veto. That's not going to happen. That means they must then go the legal route, which is going to the state Supreme Court if passes prologue. If you follow Justice Rebecca Bradley on Twitter, she, people say, is itching for a legal fight over the extent of the executive powers in an emergency. She is tweeting like regular basis, various quotes from historical figures about the threats to liberty in an emergency. That's a sign to people that there is a desire out there to see how far can the governor really go. What's the Constitution say? Now, the caveats to this legal fight are, how quickly could the Supreme Court act? Don't forget, normally a lawsuit goes circuit court, appeals court, state Supreme Court.
Right.
The state Supreme Court could take this case directly, even if it did. How quickly can they brief it, issue a ruling? It could be over, the order could be over before the court ever gets to oral arguments in this case.
Well, it's so fascinating, JR, because if you go to the Department of Health Services website, I just want to give the latest numbers, that 40,974 tests have been administered, 3,875 positive, that's a positive rate of 8%, 121 with the disease, with the virus have been hospitalized, 197 deaths. Of those, 7 in 10, 70% of the deaths, three counties, Milwaukee 114, Dane 16, Waukesha 11. The only point I'm making is this would be a fascinating legal argument, public health versus the excessive, did the governor exceed his legal authority when he, Safer at Home, plus the executive order scheduled to end on May 12th?
Let's add in one more layer to this, okay?
Please.
So the stay-at-home order, and the one that originally was issued ends April 24th or something like that, right?
Yeah.
This extends it by a month. There also are powers for local officials under state law to have their own public health emergency. So even if you lift the state order, you could have Milwaukee or a Madison, for example, issue its own orders. What's that going to mean? That gets the patchwork that Evers is worried about, that you have these places that are taking these steps versus those that are not. What happens if you have an outbreak in a rural place? Let's use Vilas County, for example. My wife's family's gone there for summer vacation every year for 40-some years. I saw a press release from them a few weeks ago saying, hey, don't come to your second home to get away from what's going on because we don't want you bringing it here. What if you do have an outbreak in one of these tourist areas of northern Wisconsin as the weather warms, we get back to normal, whatever normal is, what happens then?
Well, you're right. Many of these rural areas are what's called medically underserved. Yeah, okay, but okay, we've got to move on. The full legislature, in a historic virtual session, passed the major response to the COVID-19 crisis. So let's, first of all, it was, you and I just witnessed history. There was an empty assembly chamber with the exception of maybe a dozen assembly members. And then the Senate met in 411 South, didn't even meet in the Senate chamber, but all this sets up debate from the four leaders on the package that they sent to the governor, which he quickly signed. Could we please hear that that video?
This bill is imperfect, and it might be the first bill of a number that we are going to have to pass in the legislature. But it is timely, and I think it's been well thought out, and I think it will help. This bill is bipartisan. It's common sense. We need to do this today to get it to the governor's desk. And I urge all my colleagues to support this piece of legislation.
But our number one priority right now needs to be the health and safety of each and every resident. That is why it is disappointing that the plan before us today is limited in scope. If you're not willing to support this proposal, then our work here isn't done. We can't expect communities to fight this virus with both hands tied behind their back. We need to give them the tools and the flexibility that they need to meet the unique and unprecedented challenges that they are facing at this moment.
Government has a role to play. In fact, no one else can provide that role in so many cases. While our politics are dysfunctional and at times may be broken, the public is looking to elected officials to lead. I ask all of us to check our own ideology and our own barriers to understand that not just today, but in the future, we're going to need to act and probably go beyond those things, because only state government can in some cases.
A lot of the things that we're going through don't know party. They don't know region. They don't know ethnicity. They're just all of us going through it as one humanity. I want to thank the gentleman from the 54th, Senator Schilling, and Majority Leader Fitzgerald, for all of the work, all of the conference calls that we have done to put this package together. We took ideas from Governor Evers, from Democrats, from Republicans, from workers and business owners, from health care providers, and just from people who emailed us or sent us a message saying they needed our help. Let me just take a minute to say directly to the citizens of Wisconsin who are afraid of the virus and are afraid of what's going to happen in our state, we hear you and we understand what's happening to you and your family and our state.
Okay, we mentioned that these were historical virtual sessions, excuse me. There was bipartisan votes, 92-2 in the Assembly, 32-0 in the Senate, and the Governor Evers, within minutes, okay, a couple hours, signed that package. Let's go through a few major parts, and then JR can elaborate on them. It waives the one-week waiting period to collect unemployment benefits until February. It allows the state to collect $300 million more in federal Medicaid funding to deal with the COVID crisis. It allows joint finance to move around $75 million to deal with some health emergency costs that were unexpected or unanticipated. It directs the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation to prepare a plan to help major industries recover. That is no small charge. It allows pharmacists to extend prescriptions, bans co-pays for COVID-19 tests, and eases credentialing, including backing off from 125 training hours for nurses to 75. It eases credentialing for healthcare workers. What have I omitted, JR?
Well, the things that were left out. On the one hand, Governor Evers, for example, he wanted more than $1 billion in new GPR spending in the two bills that he released. That's not in there. On the flip side, Robin Voss on the floor of the Assembly said, because we did not deal with the the economic carnage we're going to see from this. We're going to have to come back and deal with a shortfall because that bill has not cut any spending.
Right.
Boston, they wanted to freeze spending the second year of the budget or something on those lines. They didn't do that. Right. So there are lots of things left to be done with this whole thing. What's going to be interesting is both Senator Leader Scott Fitzgerald and Minority Leader Jennifer Schilling on the floor said there may be more we have to do. The question is, what's that going to look like?
Okay.
We're getting federal money coming in at some point. The $1.9 billion from the federal package, that can only go toward unexpected COVID-19 expenses. They can't take that $1.9 billion and backfill a budget deficit. However, Evers sent a letter to the White House this week saying, we're expecting a drop of at least $2 billion in state revenues. We need help. The federal government can kind of print money. So are they going to send a bunch of money to the state to help fill that hole? There are all kinds of things like that that are on the to-do list that we got to figure out.
And we have often seen Speaker Voss refer to Governor Evers as we read the CARES Act. That's the federal stimulus act. You pretty much have sole authority to spend this $1.9 billion. And it's Wisconsin gets $2.2 million, but Milwaukee County and Dane County, that's the difference between $2.2 billion and $1.9.
The city also gets a chunk of money, too. So, yeah, they get a little more than $300 million. So it's, if you round up, it's $2.3 billion. But, yeah, it's basically if you're a community of more than 500,000 people, you get a chunk of the stimulus money. You only have three communities that qualify for that standard.
Yep. Okay. Oh, major news made when the results of the April 7 election, and as a result, we have a new we will in the fall have a new Supreme Court Justice, Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jill Karofsky beat Dan Kelly. This is a pretty amazing rise for Jill Karofsky. She goes from she was elected to the Dane County bench in 2017, and now she's going to be a Supreme Court Justice. The unofficial vote total was 1.5 million. That's bigger than in 2019. That was 1.2 billion. 2018, the Supreme Court race brought out 997, but it was not as big as 2016, the last time we had a presidential primary. Jump in here, JR, whenever you want. How big of a impact was Karofsky's chief campaign theme, a corrupt court, do you think, JR?
Well, it got drowned out by COVID-19 and the presidential primary, plus the drama of how this election was held. Don't forget, like, there were multiple court decisions the last 4 or 5 days before we went to the polls in person. We had the governor trying to stop in-person voting the day before the election. I mean, in some ways, the race got drowned out by this other drama that was going on. If you look at the numbers of the turnout in the presidential primaries, there were like 900 some thousand votes cast in the Dem primary, like 600,000 or 700,000 in the Republican one.
Yeah.
You saw kind of a correlation between the Karofsky numbers and the Kelly numbers, what happened in those respective primaries. Now, it wasn't just because of the Dem primary that Karofsky won. She had to connect with those voters who were turning out for Biden, who were turning out for Bernie, to get them to come on board with her. At the same time, you can't understate the impact of that race. I mean, look at Waukesha County, for example. That is a deep red county that produces big numbers for Republicans. It did not produce the same margin you normally see for a conservative slash Republican. Why? Because Waukesha County is also home to a lot of Democrats.
Yeah,
those Democrats are turning out to vote in the presidential primary, and that negated the advantage Republicans usually have in that county somewhat.
Well, you're right. Let's just go back to the graphic for a little bit. Karofsky's winning margin in Milwaukee and Dane counties, about 130,000 votes, more than twice. Kelly's winning margins in Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee. And Karofsky also did better in, I heard this term on the WisPolitics event yesterday, the Bow counties. So now we have Bow Wow counties, Wow in the Milwaukee suburbs, and Bow, Brown, Outagamie, and Winnebago. Okay, but now, JR, just a minute. Third-party groups spent $4.9 million. That doesn't include the Democratic Party's $1.3 million. Impact of that third-party spending and the Dem Party spending on Jill's race?
I had, if you add in the candidates and what they had reported spending through the pre-election period, plus what they had raised in large contributions after the last reporting period,
mm-hmm.
this race is on pace to be more than $9 million.
Oh.
That's about $1 million more than was spent last year in that race. The thing about the Democratic Party spending was we've watched for several years where Republicans are much more engaged in Supreme Court races, more willing to put resources into those campaigns than the Democrats had been. This time it flipped. And to Ben Wicklow's credit, the new state party chair, he took advantage of the rules that Republicans created in 2015, which, to be fair, were kind of a culmination of a number of federal court cases, but basically meant that there's no limit on donations to political parties anymore, and Republicans allowed unlimited transfers from a political party to a candidate. Right. Well, Wickler said, okay, we're going to transfer nearly $1.4 million from our coffers to Karofsky. Now, there's a risk in that. If the race had gone the other way and Kelly had won, Wickler would have faced questions like, okay, why spend that money in a Supreme Court race when you've got the fall, the presidential campaign, Ron Kine, you know, take your pick. Why'd you spend that money? Now, because not only did they win, they won by a big margin. That spigot's going to turn out even more for national going, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. We're going to pump more money into Wisconsin, try and change what happened in 2016 in the presidential race.
Okay, and I want to close this segment this way. Let's note that the Karofsky win narrows the conservative block from 4-3 beginning this fall. But also, JR, let's end on this note. It's a very unusual victory speech when you give it on YouTube, and you said, I won an election that shouldn't have been held. So let's listen to Justice-elect Jill Karofsky say that with her two children. She's a single mom behind her. Please.
We shouldn't have had an election on Tuesday. And for many, many people, they had to decide between whether or not they were going to risk their own health or the health of people they loved, or their lives, or the lives of people that they loved in order to vote. It was an untenable decision. Anyone who wasn't brought to tears when they were looking at those people in Milwaukee voting on Tuesday and voting in Green Bay on Tuesday just doesn't have a heart. It was unbelievable. The people in the state rose up, they fought through that untenable decision, and they decided that they want to have Supreme Court justices who make decisions based on what the law is, who are not beholden to special interests, who are not partisan. And that's what you're going to have in Justice Jill Karofsky.
Jill Karofsky's win was clearly biggest on Tuesday, JR, but there, we've got to note some other victories quickly because time's getting slipping away. State Representative David Crowley was the first African-American to be elected Milwaukee County Executive. He defeated Democratic Senator Chris Larson, very narrow margin, 1,000 votes out of 192,000 cast. His campaign was helped by retiring Milwaukee County Executive Chris Abley, who spent, I've got a number of 767. I know you well enough to know you'll correct that. Pardon me, ballpark?
Yeah, okay. That includes other spending by Americans for American Federation for Children, which also backed Crowley. Also, there was an issue ad run by, I think, Citizen Action, like a mail piece helping Larson. So that wasn't reported that we can't know how much it is, but definitely the Crowley-Abley coalition of money looks like it outspent the Larson and other people coalition of money.
Okay, and just a P.S., when Chris Abley, the Milwaukee County exec, appeared at a legislative committee, he said that Milwaukee County faces a budget shortfall going into 2021 of $25 to $30 million. Mr. County Exec Crowley, good luck. Okay, let's next look at Tom Barrett, former state legislator, member of Congress. Then he was reapportioned out of his district seat. Now, won a fifth term as mayor. Mr. Barrett, as I looked it up, 66. He easily defeated State Senator Lena Taylor by a margin of 63-37. Taylor had criticized Barrett's handling of the COVID-19 illness, the impact on African Americans. But Mr. Barrett has a number of challenges. Will there be new police department budget cuts? He had to cut 60 officers. The rash of gun violence. And what's the status? Scaled back or not held of the Milwaukee Democratic Convention. Okay, JR, your turn on Barrett's victory.
A couple of things. One, don't forget that race was conducted where early voting was limited, or actually, I think, cut off in Milwaukee. Went from 180 polling places down to five.
Five.
Look, Taylor faced an uphill battle to beat Barrett anyway. Milwaukee does not turn out incumbent mayors. I don't know if it, I can't remember last time it did. What's more, he had more resources, all kinds of advantages in this, but not having the early voting option, only having five polling places, likely cut into some of the election day turnout among the African American community, people tell me, would have closed the gap. I mean, would have like turned the results of the race, but maybe made it better than, you know, the 2-1 margin he had. That said, you know, look, the mayor had a lot to sell. The city was on the upswing in a lot of ways prior to this COVID-19 pandemic. Land of the National Convention, like, he had a good story to tell about what's going on, although there are some problems that Taylor focused on that maybe just couldn't quite communicate, you know, the resources to do it, to make a dent in his image.
Okay, we've got two more topics before your stock picks. Marcy's Law changed the constitutional amendment. Voters approved it hugely, a term that you and I have heard, 76% to 24%. The ad blitz that I think drove it was funded by a national group. It swamped opposition from defense lawyers who said the changes could undermine rights of accused. Just real quickly, only three things, just summarize three things of what it does. It gives new protections and right to be heard in court actions involving accused or criminal when sentenced up for parole or pardon for victims. It allows victims to refuse to be interviewed or deposed in criminal cases. It requires information on economic, physical, psychological effect on victims submitted to presiding judge. Just real quickly, JR, I think this issue, this constitutional change, got completely, not ignored, but there wasn't the emphasis on it because of COVID and all these other issues. Any PSs quickly?
No, just the advantage, the spending on the pro-amendment side versus, I mean, what? You saw like blog posts and tweets opposing the amendment. There just wasn't an organized opposition to try and stop that thing.
Yeah, and I don't think we really know what this is going to do to our criminal justice system. But anyway, we're almost out of time. Okay, let's note other April 7 election results. No surprise, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden, the former vice president, defeated Bernie Sanders by a 66-34 margin. Yesterday at the WisPolitics Forum, Republican state chairman Hitt said Bernie only stayed in and announced the next day to help Jill Karofsky. Real quickly, JR, your response?
You know, it did. I mean, I'm sure that there was a calculation made that it would help. Timing sure looks odd to have him drop out for the returns are out. But yeah, I mean, you know, it helped. But don't forget, too, people voted by mail for such a long period of time. Even if he dropped out the week before, that was already kind of, the momentum was in place for voting by mail in that election. So would it have changed the dynamic a little bit? But would it, Karofsky have lost just because Bernie dropped out 3 days out? Probably not.
Okay, let's also note that President Trump was unopposed in the Republican primary. He got 98.3% of the vote. Two other legislators, Democratic Representative Joe Casta-Zamarripa was elected to the Milwaukee Common Council. I think that's District 8. And Democratic Representative Jason Field lost his bid to be City of Milwaukee Comptroller. Okay, JR, stock picks.
Let's see, rising. Who did I have rising this week?
You had Lisa Neubauer, my friend.
Lisa Neubauer. So a year ago, she was a conservative target because she lost the Supreme Court race. And conservatives felt like she'd been exposed, quote unquote, as a liberal and a conservative leaning to strongly conservative second district court of appeals. Yes. She won by 8 points on this election. Okay. I keep wanting to say on Tuesday, but the results are out on Monday. Anyway, when I asked people what happened, the feedback I got was one, the Democratic primary helped. Don't forget, again, Waukesha County. Of the votes cast in Waukesha County for president, the primaries, 56% were for the Republican in the Republican contest. That's a 66% Republicans county. It tells you how Democrats had a boost in that turnout compared to Republicans, right, overall. Secondly, Bougain, the guy ran against her, he only got like 52% in Waukesha County. That's not a good sign. It tells you that Neubauer had superior resources, ran a better campaign, had a better message. And while it's not the win she wanted, i.e. she wanted last spring's Supreme Court election, it's a little validation of her as a candidate and a campaigner that she won by this margin this spring.
Okay, time slipping away. Mixed.
Let's see. Who have mixed?
7th Congressional District, Tiffany Zunker.
So don't forget, the governor made every effort on closing days of the April election to move the date. Yesterday, when we talked on that conference call, his legal counsel says, the May 12th special election might be okay. But the question is why? It's still in the middle of a pandemic, the stay-at-home order, so why is that okay? Well, the justification was it is a more rural area, there are fewer cases, they have more time to prepare, it's going to be different. Cynically, people tell me, and I know it's hard to talk about cynicism in this business, but it's not as important to the governor as the spring election was, right? Now, I'm not saying that's the case, but think about it. It's a heavily Republican district. Dems are not expected to win that one. They've been able to vote, you know, collect absentee ballots for a while. It's just not the same profile. Also, it turned out to be a lot less in that district. The question is, if it was so dangerous to go to vote in April 7th in person, why is it not dangerous to go May 12th?
Okay, you got 15 seconds on falling. President
Donald Trump. Look, Trump was on the ballot, but really in name only. But what this election showed was, one, he can't drive people unless he's really, truly threatened. He called for supporters to back Daniel Kelly sometimes on Twitter, was in a TV ad, didn't help a whole lot. And the national narrative about this race is not just that Kurowski won, but what it says about the fall. Now, you and I know Supreme Court races in Wisconsin are not great predictors of November results, right?
Right.
However, the map Kurowski produced is the Democratic dream map for November. Massive turnout in Milwaukee and Dane counties, suburbs of Milwaukee not proving great for Republicans, a bluish hue to the Fox Valley, and southwest Wisconsin turning blue. That's it. It's just a warning for Republicans. And oh, by the way, there's a sense of an enthusiasm gap that Democrats might have been like, hey, look, they're going to make me vote, i.e. blaming Republicans for going forward. I'm going to show those guys. Does that enthusiasm go away come November? Maybe not. But if you think about the 1.55 million who turned out on for this election, maybe 1.4 million more for April, for November. Trump has to win those guys, by the new people who didn't turn out, by more than double digits to match what happened on Tuesday. How does that happen in this environment? Stay tuned.
Okay, and I know we're in overtime here, but I want to make this point. In an interview with the Wisconsin Eye, Revenue Secretary Peter Barca made a misstatement that, to his credit, he has asked to be corrected. He said in that interview that the tax stimulus checks that I hope you got are taxable. Let me say they are not taxable. They are tax exempt. One more time, the tax stimulus checks are tax exempt. Thank you, Mr. Barca, for admitting your error. Next week, Monday, the Supreme Court will consider the governor's veto powers. And we got so much news, we didn't even talk about F-35s coming to Madison. Half of the Democratic National Convention staff being laid off or reassigned. Whoa, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for April 17th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.